Welcome back to the Grimerica Outlawed News Roundup, March 5th, 2025. Coming at you with the Circular Pew Pew Squad. Your names are too long. And Carney Slash and Sell, which I'm surprised I haven't heard more about this. Maybe it's about to start coming out. We'll see. But it's a long segment. So mine is a longer segment for sure.
That's the long segment, that one?
Yeah, it's going to take a minute to get through.
All right. Well, what do you think of the
70-page report?
70-page report. What do you think of everything that's going on right now? What do you think of the whole Trump speech? And
I watched the Trump speech.
Yeah, what'd you think?
I mean, I didn't. It was boring, kind of, but I watched it because I felt like I should for the show. I think it's my job now. This is my full-time job. So. And it's tight. So support us or sign up. But
you don't have your day job anymore?
I don't have my day job anymore. This is it. This is it. You know, the company closed down, and instead of getting another job, we're just going to go for it here. So if you want to support us, sign up at GrimericaOutlawed.ca and support the work. And if we get enough people to start doing shows more often, you know, maybe a daily roundup. I mean, that'd be expensive, but maybe three shows a week or something like that would be more reasonable.
Yeah,
I mean, I do think like you could do a shorter show in the mornings, but it's too much to commit to daily because life is life.
Oh, yeah. By the time you set up the streams and do the uploading and the downloading and the posting, and it's just like
make it's the hard. Yeah, make the shorts. You gotta make the shorts.
Oh yeah, it's crazy.
Crazy.
I mean, what did you think about the like? What's with the Democrats and the signs and all the like?
That's weird. It's creepy. I mean, it was kind of creepy, even like the Vance behind them, and they're always just standing up and clapping, and it's just like the whole ritual of it all is very creepy, kind of.
Yeah.
But I gotta say, I mean, at the end of it, I was like, huh, I could see not seeing this guy stepping down. I could see it. I could see how you could think that. I don't have to go far to see a point where he's like, no, I'm gonna stick around.
Well, I'm only halfway through it, and I mean,
other than that, there's nothing bad in there. I mean, are you watching the CBC one? I didn't have time, but did you notice like when the CBC cut in to do their overlay? They only did it three times during the whole show. They cut in three times to like.
Can I guess where one is?
Yes,
they're talking about RFK and Maha.
Dude, as soon as they started talking about, so he says it used to be 1 in 10,000 had autism, and now it's 1 in. CBC cuts in and just starts like. Literally just talking over the president for like about 30 seconds or 45 seconds. They talk over so you can't hear Trump talking. They're like, oh, if you're just joining us, we're here watching Trump's speech live. And it's like, yeah, he's speaking right now. Why are you talking? So that was the one time. That was the most egregious time, probably the last time. And then that was probably the worst of it. Then the other time was like the other two times when he was sort of highlighting some stuff that were
the Doge stuff, the USAID stuff.
No, more like, cause that stuff is still sort of politically divisive. It was more the stuff that would have been not played. Like there was it was like maybe a thing for someone who's, I think the one was for a kid, a little crippled kid or something like that. And it's like this, something that neither side could really, something that, because it was the Canadian news. So
they're trying to be nonpartisan with their cutouts. Like, so
it's it seemed fucking politicized.
Or not politicized.
Yeah. No, it seemed to be the CBC was politicized. They were cutting in, like, it was just weird. I mean, if you watch the CBC one, you'll see what I'm talking about. But the most egregious was definitely when he flat out started getting ready to talk about autism and you know, I don't know what he said after that because they cut it out for 40 seconds.
It's pretty weird for us to hear them talking openly about this stuff now, whether something's going to happen or not. Like, I'm not, you know, trusting that anything's going to happen, but I mean, just the whole Doge thing and the autism and the girl who the school turned tranny is what DC Rogers said. That's probably who the CBC cut off. Right. That's probably the one. That's
probably the one. Yeah.
But I mean, because I'm only like halfway through it, and I'm like, this is what I wish I would like. you know, it's hard not to wish that a government would actually do that, you know, in Canada too, right? Some of the stuff is pretty common sense. Like, I don't want any of that stuff. And for them to be talking about the NGOs and the autism and all, and the borders and immigration crime, like, this all seems like this was like the 1990s, the way things were going, you know. It seemed like we were going down the path where things were okay back then. And we've sort of lost our way, and we've lost our way arguably because of the sort of liberal world order in a lot of ways. So, I mean, I have this post here from somebody that was there at the speech. He was sitting right behind the Democrats in the gallery. He had a perfect bird's eye view of everything. No doubt very dramatic for all those watching, but there was so much more the cameras missed. He says, not only did the Dems not applaud or stand for the stories honoring average Americans, but neither did their guests in the gallery. Even for the most heartwarming moments, most stayed seated. Very few ever applauded. It was heartbreaking to see. During these moments, I could see entire rows of Democrats staring down at their phones. I was close enough to see what they were looking at. Most were texting or scrolling through social media feeds. The only moment during the speech that generated enthusiastic collective applause, what do you think this was?
The war.
Was when Trump mentioned spending hundreds of billions on Ukraine. There were five or six Dems that immediately pulled out Ukrainian flags and started waving them. This was notable since their applause was not meant to celebrate any result of that spending, i.e. a tangible victory for Ukraine or benefit to America, but it was in response to the mention of spending itself. The fact was, this was so natural and immediate, was unnerving. It was the only thing that pulled their faces away from their phones. Not the celebration of life in our homeland, but death of hundreds of thousands in a foreign one. Crazy, eh? I mean, I could keep going, but I think everybody gets the gist of it.
Did you mean to share the screen? Or?
No, I just thought I'd read it. I mean, I could have shared it, but... Fair enough. The most remarkable part of it was the indescribable energy coming from the Republicans. It was truly a sight to see such an impressive group of people from every possible background and every political persuasion coalesce around a shared vision. One of the most important moments in American history I was able to be a part of. Will be forever grateful for Senator Hawley having me as a guest. So, yeah, I don't know, man. I did think that. I bet you some of those politicians might want to, like, might be getting swept up with all that, right? Like, wouldn't you be, like, if you went into politics, I don't know, it's hard to say. You know what I mean? Like, being in politics and then seeing actually stuff happen and, like, feeling a part of, being a part of, like, positive change.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't trust it all either. But man, the other side is losing it again. It's such a weird time right now. With the virtue signaling is off the charts with the Team Canada and the taxes and the tariffs and the liquor store shelves and.
Oh my God! Well, we did it too. I think Danielle Smith also banned. Yeah. I mean, it's pathetic.
They're all just full on fighting back with tariffs.
Yeah, it's a real mess. It seems to be a real mess. I think the auto tariffs got a month leeway.
Well, do you want to talk about that? You don't want to talk about that video, do you? About the probate?
I don't think so. No, I think that's crazy.
Yeah, do you?
Yeah. From a demonologist?
I don't know what his name is, but I didn't realize he was a demonologist. But.
Yeah, and a bunch of other crazy stuff. That's when I was trying, I was like, who is this guy? Because it sounds good. And then I like went to his bio and it was like demonologist and like a professor of theology and all this other like, just like a few things that if there was just one on them, their own, you would be like, eh. Not such a big deal, but when you stack them all up together, it's like, okay, well, this could be just.
Well, weird. You know what's weird about it is that there's layoffs happening in Brampton too. The assembly plant, it seems like there, and you know, you were talking about your company recently too that you worked for is shutting the doors, and We're waiting for like a rush or a push, like a revival of the economy. But I don't think companies can wait this long or something. Like, why is it so? Like, I heard that steel prices were going to go up like 50% or something like that. And I was thinking, well, why? If the Americans, and it's the retaliatory tariffs, right, that are causing it. So yeah. It seems odd. Like, why are they messing things up even worse? Like, why don't you just tell Trump you were wrong about the, you know, not building your economy up and about the drugs and all that? But I mean, they can't even admit the fentanyl problem. And it is a real problem. Like I got a report here from Nia Fannerstill about that, going back a couple of years, the International Coalition Against Illicit Economies. This isn't just like a made up problem. In Saskatoon, did you hear about that? 23 overdoses in 24 hours, 48 in the past week alone. In this one tiny small city, like Saskatoon has what, 200,000 people?
Isn't that much?
Mass fentanyl manufacturers and traffickers are poisoning and killing our people. I mean, of course, this is from Pierre Poilievre, but Saskatoon Fire Department has had to deal with 20 more overdoses in the city between 7 a.m. Friday and 7 a.m. on Saturday after responding to 25 overdoses on February 25th and 26th with 20 more overdoses reported by other organizations. I mean, so, you know.
Are you going to share your screen or still no?
Yeah, I can share it. I'll share it. But this isn't like a big, this isn't Vancouver. This isn't Calgary, right? Saskatoon is pretty small, right? And this is the Saskatoon Fire Department. I don't know why they're putting it, they're talking about the fire department, but then of course there's a big argument over legalized opioid safe supply solves this. And then people are like, have you heard of British Columbia, dude? It's not. And then drug overdoses have nothing to do with the Saskatoon Fire Department, media dickheads, massive amount of money laundering. And yet your uniparty leaders keep telling Trump there's no drug epidemic in Canada. The country has been hijacked by the communist Chinese and the drug cartels, all aided and abetted by uniparty politicians. Trump's not the threat to our sovereignty. It's the last 20, 30 years of globalist Marxist climate cult uniparty politicians and their radical leftist policies. I mean, that's kind of what I think.
Pretty much.
Love how this liberal government is our country drug dealer. They'll kill everyone eventually. So those are some of the comments about it. But yeah, that's Pierre's post. Pierre. Yes, those people are living on the streets. If they're not dying from overdoses, they are freezing to death on the streets, and you want to send our money to Ukraine instead of helping Canadians. It's almost as if you're trying to lose the election. How much did the WEF pay you to throw this election? So now this guy's calling out Pierre for that.
Well, he has kind of switched to some pretty liberal talking points.
I mean... just shifting with the wind, this with the political wind.
Yeah, it's not a good look. It's a tough look.
If you are really concerned about why Canadians are dying, why aren't you willing to comment on all-cause mortality? Oh, that's a good one. I mean, I do like that one. That's one of my favorites. We went through all that years ago. Deep corruption and partisan ideologies in every institution in Canada, cabinet, RCMP, Senate, judiciary, etc. MPs flaunt enriching themselves and friends while you all insulate yourselves from the population who employs you and cry about security. This is why we are where we are. Yeah. So yeah, he's not, I don't know, man. He is, you're right. He's shifting to the talking points that seem to be, congealing Team Canada together right now.
Absolutely. All right. What do you want to get to next? Do you want to do the big one right away? Do yours?
Okay, I'll do mine first then. So what do you think I'm talking about here with the circular pew pew squad?
Oh, I don't know. It's got to have something to do with guns.
No.
No?
No, it's not. It's I just put pew pew instead of firing, right? I didn't want to put that in the title.
Oh, so is that like a Doge thing?
Not really, but it probably overlaps with that. Yeah, I mean, it probably can be said with that. But Did you hear about the measles thing going on with RFK?
I don't know the details, but didn't he just basically say it's too bad some people have measles?
Well, I mean, what I noticed was everybody just railing against RFK. Not everybody, but there's a bunch of people in the freedom health movement, right, that have big X accounts. And there are a lot of the anti-vaxxers, the people that we follow through COVID and stuff. So, like, I really respect a lot of these researchers. They're about holistic, natural health a lot of times. This will probably get us in trouble on YouTube. But, I mean, Henry Ely is one of them. And he's like, I was like, why is he so upset at RFK, right? And he's like, Doc, are you at least happy vitamin A was mentioned way down at the end? He's talking about all this. Very important to share. Let me just find the one I'm actually. It's hard to describe just how much I can't stand this message. Reading this, you'd never know what we worked on was vitamin A and the importance of not jabbing during an active infection. So everyone making excuses for RFK, do this. Replace his name with Xavier Becerra or Becerra. How do you feel about the op-ed? Still feel like making excuses for it? And he's showing this op-ed here, or he's actually showing a post from RFK that says, talking about the measles outbreak in Texas. And here at HHS.gov, we have supported Texas Department of Health through technical assistance and jabs, 2,000 MMR doses through immunization program. So Henry's like, is this real? And then he's, I can't tell you how much I do not approve of this message, Secretary Kennedy. I worked my ass off Friday for this. Fine, we'll do it alone. So he's going on about this Fox News opinion thing, right? So I was starting to see other people write about it and other people like excoriate him about it. And it reminds me of the Doge thing and Elon, right? And Trump too. It's like this whole sort of ex internet, new media thing. Like, how do I even describe this? Because of course there's a lot of the new media that's probably not part of this. They're more of like just blindly supporting Trump and Elon maybe, but there's a whole bunch of people that are in that sort of category that we are in, right? Where they're just not giving them any chance. Like, it's, for example, Pam Bondi about the Epstein stuff, right? Just flipping out. Pam has lost her credibility, like Laura Loomer and her having a cat fight about the whole thing. And it's just like, dude, can we not just give them a chance? They just got into power with the new administration. Can't we give them a chance If a truckload of Epstein files showed up, okay, like there's thousands of documents now and everybody's going to be like, give us the docs, give us the docs, give us the docs. And the whole thing about them handing the binders out, like, I don't know. I just feel like we're not giving them a chance. This is an interesting time after the speech and Bondi and Musk and RFK. Like, this is unprecedented. I do want to give everybody a chance here, right? You know what I mean? I don't want to be black-pilled about all of it. Like, oh, it's all a big psyop. Like, for the first time ever, we're talking about this stuff out loud. Like, what's her name? Kennedy's friend that was running as a VP for him, what's her name? Nicole Shanahan was talking about chemtrails. Like, so this is like, she's one step away from VP and she's talking about chemtrails. Like, this is unbelievable. The NGO webs, the chemtrails, like all this stuff is being talked about now, whether it's all a controlled op or not, I don't know. But I mean, at least it's exciting that they're talking about this stuff. Let some stuff happen here before we get too upset at everybody.
I agree.
So then I started getting like, okay, well, that's interesting. So the truth about cancer said that, like, this is kind of the deconstructing about it a little bit, which I wanted to share with you, because I think it's important to get into the deconstruction aspect a bit. But we know this is like the truth about cancer. I think this is Ty and Charlene or whatever her name is, Bollinger. RFK did not betray us. He's fighting for us. And if you think otherwise, you're falling for the trap. Let's stop attacking the one guy who's actually fighting for our health and our children's health, a man who has sacrificed more than most of us can imagine for the future of this nation. So again, like, I'm not saying that this is like the right take either, but it's kind of saying exactly what happened here. Let's start with a simple question. How many of you have ever read an article that didn't match the headline? You know, the kind of clickbait nonsense that gets people outraged before they even read a single word. If you're raising your hand, congratulations, you're human. But if you're one of the people who saw the recent Fox News op-ed from RFK with the headline MMR jab is crucial to avoiding potentially deadly disease, and immediately decided that Bobby had sold out. Then we've got news for you. You've been played again. So can't people just hold off a little bit about commenting on stuff? It's like there's almost too much incentive to get clickbaity type stuff going on now. And now you have all these people backtracking. Oh, I guess it's not so bad. But here's the truth. Bobby, oh, so yeah, so I read that, right? You've deadly disease. Okay, so here's the truth. Bobby did not write that headline. He never said those words, not once. Yet the mob came charging in. So this is not even the left mob. This is like the mob that's been conditioned, or maybe it's the new, you know, post-COVID conspiracy mob. Or are they, like, where does that intersection, where does this mob come from, right? Is it some of the left that came over following him and now they're upset that he's not? Or, like, is it mostly, like, our peeps, our mob? Like, yet the mob came charging in, pitchforks in hand, ready to brand him a MAHA traitor. But let's pause for a second. Did you actually read the op-ed, or did you just copy and paste someone else's hot take? Because if you had read it, you'd know that Bobby did not tell anyone to get jabbed. He did not push mandates. He did not parrot the tired, safe, and effective narrative. In fact, he did the exact opposite. So I just want to go, I'll flip down to the bottom here, what he actually said. Let's break it down, because apparently some of you missed the memo. He unequivocally supports choice. He said the decision to jab is a personal one. That's it. No mandates, no coercion, no guilt tripping, just choice. Isn't that what we've been fighting for? I mean, a lot of people just want these things banned too. And I understand that. But there is like a political, there is some strategy that has to be employed here by him and Trump and Musk. And you can't just go in and tip over the apple cart completely when the people are waiting for a few apples, right? Like you need to kind of like dole things out strategically here. You can't just, he reaffirmed that jabs carry risks. He didn't sugarcoat it. He didn't pretend that they're perfect. He didn't push the safe and effective narrative. He stated that vitamin A can dramatically reduce measles mortality. And guess what? The CDC now agrees with him. He pointed out that measles death declined significantly before the jab, thanks to the improvements in nutrition and sanitation. Measles fatalities dropped by 98% long before the jab was introduced. When was the last time you heard, this is my point, right? When was the last time you heard an HHS secretary say that? Spoiler alert, never. So this is about the bigger picture, right? The reality is he's doing something unprecedented. He's speaking the truth while navigating the shark-infested waters of DC. The establishment is waiting for him to stumble, to say something they can use to bury him. But instead of giving them ammunition, he's laying the groundwork for real change. So, I mean, it goes on. It's a good article how he's fighting for our children and stuff like that. And I'm just not going to blindly believe that either. But then we've got Malone, too, who came out and cross-posted that. And he says why they're desperate to silence him. And this is a whole article, too, which is worth it. They want you panicked. Here's the real agenda behind the measles scare. I'm not going to get into that. It's a long read. But I do want to share some other stuff about this. So like, here's some other doctors that are pushing some of the stuff we talked about. So the child was admitted to the hospital for RSV and pneumonia. This is like what happened in the Texas thing, right? Hospital was clueless on how to treat the child. Hospital then gives the child the MMR jab. Child dies, vax death. Hospital claims measles death, and the media has a freak out. Am I missing anything? So it is interesting that they're saying this kid died of measles when he was jabbed. I think they gave him an MMR jab.
Uh-oh. Well, we're not
saying. Well, he was sick in the hospital. Like, are you kidding me? And here's the health ranger, because he was one of the ones I thought was also excoriating him, but I think he had a more balanced take, or at least he came around sooner. So he says, told you they took a dying kid and injected him with live measles virus. I didn't know that it was live measles virus in those jabs. Did you realize that?
Yeah, I think it's just sort of, it's like chopped down a bit.
Yeah.
It is a live virus. Yeah.
Yeah. So then they could claim he died with measles. Q class media hysteria. The truth comes out about the child who died of measles in Texas. Hysteria is easily fueled in the media, without facts.
Should have probably saved this for Sunday.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's too late. Sorry. But I probably should have saved it for Sunday. Anyways, there is, look at this one. Mary Talley Bowden, 600,000 hospital acquired infections this year with 98,000 deaths, 164 measles cases, one death this year. Like
hospital acquired infection. Is that just like any general infection you get from the hospital?
I guess. Yeah.
Holy moly, man. That's like a couple thousand a day.
Yeah. I trust her. She was the one fighting against the Means, Kelly Means and all that, right? She got excoriated by this. So what else was there on this? I think that's it. The main thing was that the timing around this was the day before what do they call that when they get nominated for an NIH? Who's running the NIH? Oh, Jay Bhattacharya was apparently this all happened right before Bhattacharya was on the stand trying to get, what do they call it when they get admitted to the thing? When they go through that process with Congress? Senate or whatever they get,
confirmed.
So it was the day before Bhattacharya is up there to be confirmed. Right. I mean, the timing is very, very suspicious. So.
All right, my turn.
And the other thing I just read at the very beginning of this, it's like, they talked about the jab rate of that. And they said either non-jabbed or unconfirmed. So 90 or 80% of them were, they didn't know whether they were jabbed or not. So you can't even like use that for any data analysis at all. Cause that's what I think of right away. I'm like, oh, and what's the jab rate? 95% in these outbreaks.
Usually probably that or higher, I'd say. All right, let's jump into mine, which is this going to work? Yeah, this should work here. So I don't know if you've seen this going around, but this is a couple years old. So the date on this, that's because that's when I printed it, the PDF. So this, the actual article is from 2022. It's called Slash and Sell. There's some rainforest on the right here that's been slashed up into nothing on the left. So this story is called How Financial Giant Brookfield and Its Big Bank Backers Profited from Deforestation and the Abuse of Indigenous People's Rights. In Brazil. Can you guess why this is important now?
Because of the what's happening with Carney in Canada, I guess, because isn't he on the board of Brookfield? Or
yeah,
he was too. I mean, isn't it his company maybe? Or
a Canadian asset manager, part run by green finance champion Mark Carney, cleared thousands of football fields worth of tropical forest in Brazil. Our investigation can reveal an estimated 9,000 hectares of deforestation, the legality of which could not be proven by Brookfield Asset Management, took place on 8 farms owned and managed by Brookfield's soybean farming empire. The forest clearance took place in Cerrado, Brazil, in the Cerrado, Brazil's tropical savanna between 2012 and 2021. According to analysis of satellite imagery from Brazil's Space Institute, before the properties were sold off in late 2021 in a slash and sell move, the empire also owned a farm whose managers sought to evict indigenous peoples from land they claimed their own. Brookfield's involvement in deforestation and human rights abuses contrasts with its own environmental, social, and governance ESG policy and Mr. Carney's public image.
If they can virtue signal enough, they can do whatever they want, I guess.
We operate with the highest ethical standards, conducting our business with integrity, Brookfield wrote in its latest report. But Brookfield's owner, operator, investor model means it could have profited 3 times from from forest destruction in Brazil, from the sale of commodities, from the sale of financial instruments derived from these commodities, and from fluctuations in the price of its resale assets, such as farms. Brookfield and its biggest banking backers, HSBC, Deutsche Bank, and Bank of America, signed up to the Glasgow Alliance for Net Zero, the G fans. That's going to be important later. The alliance commits its signatories to take an immediate action to reach net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. Yet deforestation on Brookfield's farms released an estimated 600,000 tons of CO2 in the 9 years to June 2021, destroying parts of a crucial carbon sink and biodiversity hotspot. There's Carney.
What does it mean there? It destroyed carbon? What did it say? It's
because they're destroying the rainforest.
Okay. Yeah, he served as the chair and head of transition investing at Brookfield Asset Management. He joined the company's board in 2020 and became chair in 2022. Good timing, eh?
Early one.
Stepped down in mid-January 2025 when he launched his bid for liberal leadership. As head of transition investing, Carney focused on climate-related initiatives. And he was well compensated by Brookfield, holding some 41,000 deferred share units as of April 2024.
Early one October morning, trustees of a San Diego pension fund gathered at their headquarters on the outskirts of town to hear a pitch for investment with an unusually high rate of return, 20 to 25%. It was 2010, and the director of Brookfield Agricultural Group in Brookfield, Brazil, were cycling through a PowerPoint presentation outlining how Brazilian cash crops could help grow the pension savings of San Diego's county teachers and civil servants. It took them just over an hour to convince the San Diego County Employees Retirement Association to invest $75 million in the Brookfield Brazil Agriland Fund, more than a fifth of the fund's final value. Brookfield would acquire nearly 100,000 hectares of farmland through this fund over the next 3 years, including at least five of the eight farms where we have identified forests subsequently being destroyed to make way for crops, the legality of which state authorities in Brookfield could not verify. So, basically they're cutting down the rainforest to make farm fields. Brookfield first entered Brazil in 1899. It's crazy they've been in there that long, right? 126 years.
Yeah.
As the owner of a small private utility company and built Sao Paulo's first electric trams and first streetlights, it now holds immense energy, infrastructure, and agriculture holdings in Brazil, from natural gas pipelines to hydroelectric and nuclear power plants, shopping malls, railways, and a vast network of farms. By the end of 2020, it had nearly doubled its agricultural land holdings, 267,000 hectares dedicated to soybean, sugar, rubber, corn, and cattle, across 22 farms in seven states, compared to just 150,000 hectares of agricultural land a decade earlier. Its timber plantations spanned a further 275,000 hectares, and it sold more than 3 million cubic meters of logs, 16,200 tons of charcoal, according to its latest annual report. Brookfield's Brazilian assets were worth $22 billion in 2021, including $8 billion in forestry and agriculture assets out of $391 billion in global consolidated assets. So you can see here where the farms are smaller and they made them bigger. In total, around 9,000 hectares of deforestation took place on these properties between 2012 and 2021. According to our analysis of data from Brazil's National Institute for Space Research and its land management system, the size of this clear-felled land is equivalent to 11,000 football pitches. So what's a football pitch? A soccer field?
I'll find out. How many acres do you think that is?
I would say that is going to be 2,000 acres.
2 acres each, or...?
Yeah,
it's about 1.32 acres each. That's American football. Is that what you think? It's football or soccer? No,
it's soccer. After the deforestation, the farms were sold off to firms, including another investment fund in 2021, in an apparent slash and sell strategy.
Yeah, 1.86, so 2 acres, let's say. So 20,000 acres, let's say, round it up.
So basically a slash and sell would be like going in there, buying a farm for this much and slashing a bunch of land you're not supposed to cut down to make the farmland bigger and worth more.
And they get approval from that through the government, I guess? So it's government land that they're expanding into, or?
Let's see. This would be government land, I assume, protected rainforest land. Despite filing freedom of information requests to relevant state authorities, we were unable to obtain permits that are needed to authorize deforestation under Brazilian law for at least 7 of the 8 Brookfield farms identified. Our analysis found that 6,700 hectares of forests of deforestation at these farms between June 2012 and June 2021, equivalent to 8,205 football pitches, are more than half the size of San Francisco. But Brazilian authorities were unable to provide information meant to be publicly available on whether or not this was legal. Fazenda, Nebraska was the only farm for which state authorities could share permits covering the time deforestation took place. Environmental bodies are meant to publish information about deforestation permits in an official gazette easily available to the public under Brazil's Environmental Transparency Law of 2003. Look at that fucking picture. Isn't that crazy? Combine soybeans. A lot of soybeans, man. It's as far as the eye can see. Probably looks like that here sometimes, too. Slave labor concerns. So, Fazenda, Colorado, a soybean farm in Tocantin State, was the site of 126 hectares of deforestation between September 2012 and July 2018, primarily in 2012 and 2014, according to our analysis. Police found 42 farm workers living in slave-like conditions inside the farm in 2014, 28 of whom were housed in a 70-square-meter house with no toilets or showers, according to court papers from November 2021 and local newspaper reports. The Brookfield-controlled firm Brookfield Brazil Participacos, BBP, was fined $800,000 for slave labor offenses. You just got to pay a fine for having slaves. It's not bad. In a ruling upheld by a regional labor court in December of 2021. A labor court in Tocantins ruled in 2014 that both Brookfield and Brookfield Brazil Participatos and Indaiai Agronegocio, Fazenda, Colorado's direct owner, were jointly liable for allegations of workers being held in slave-like conditions at the farm in 2014. The firms were condemned to pay $800,000. Oh, that's $800,000, whatever that R stands for. It's only $163,000, yeah, of real money. That's not bad.
They had a dollar sign in the other one, though. Oh, I guess it's R dollar, yeah.
That's not bad for 42 slaves. That's like, what, $2,000, $3,000 each? $350,000
Yeah.
Ruling they both appealed. Despite their argument to the contrary, it was controlled by BBP, according to the court. Renato Cassim Cavallani, who at the time was CEO of both Brookfield Agriculture Group and vice president of Brookfield Asset Management, was director and controlling shareholder of both Ndaya and BBP, the court said.
That seems crazy.
They are both listed as companies under common control in Brookfield Brazil Asset Management Investimentos in a document filed to the CVM, Brazil Security and Exchange Commission, in 2015. Brookfield appears to be in breach of the membership guidelines of the Roundtable on Responsible Soy, a Swiss voluntary certification scheme. BBP highlights its farm membership with its annual, in its annual report for 2020 and 2021. The RTRS prohibits the clearing of any natural land for soy in Brazil after 2016, including any land with natural vegetation such as Cerrado land. It endorsed the Cerrado Manifesto in 2017, a zero to this deforestation pledge. But 1,900 hectares of deforestation took place at the eight of Brookfield farms on Cerrado land between the start of 2016 and June of 2021, our analysis of official data suggests. All of these farms were registered with soy production as their primary aim, according to unofficial corporate data available online. So there's some satellite image of apparent soybean storage bins. You don't need to get into all that. Scroll down. It is nice when it's highlighted when it's a 70-page report. So Brookfield claims to be a responsible and sustainable investor. And at the time of writing, the front page of its website showcased Mr. Carney's newspaper pieces and videos on green finance. Our analysis estimates the deforestation found in Brookfield's farms over 9 years released 600,000 tons of carbon dioxide, equivalent to flying from London to New York 1.2 million times. Our analysis is based on an estimate of the tropical biomass present on the 8 farms before deforestation took place. This poor track record raises questions about how Brookfield will meet its new commitment to net zero by 2050 as part of its GFANS membership. Tropical forests store vast quantities of carbon, and their destruction accounts for the majority of carbon dioxide emissions that come from land use and land use change, according to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Brookfield, Brazil, says its greenhouse gas inventory for agricultural operations showed its farms captured 309,000 tons of carbon through biological sequestration. How come Brazil can do that, but we can't?
I don't know.
It did not explain how this sequestration took place or whether this is considered deforestation, but said two of its farms were accredited with Cargill's net zero program. Phew. There was great fanfare at GFANS launch, but if it's not trickling down to what high-profile members are doing in terms of land ownership, that is very worrying. Brookfield is no stranger to controversies over carbon accounting. In February 2021, 6 months after he was hired by Brookfield, Carney claimed at a Bloomberg conference that his employer had net zero emissions impact across its entire portfolio due to its enormous renewables business that we've built up and all of the avoided emissions that come with that. He later retracted this claim, which had been based on a controversial method of offsetting emissions by measuring those emissions that were avoided through the consumption of green energy assets. That Brookfield,
like whatever's clean, whatever's clean, we tell you what's clean and green.
Foreign companies are banned from owning more than a quarter of land in any Brazilian municipality under a 2010 legal interpretation of existing restrictions on foreign ownership of Brazilian land. This includes firms registered in Brazil, but ultimately controlled from abroad, like Brookfield. Brookfield's elaborate financial strategies are interesting because these have traditionally been used to circumvent Brazilian laws on foreign land ownership, said Junior Alexio, a sociologist at the Federal Rural University of Rio de Janeiro, who wrote his thesis on Brookfield's land ownership model in 2019. These strategies facilitate control of the land while making its ownership deliberately difficult to pin down. There's a little map of this is all the land they own, how many hectares they own in each little spot there all over Brazil. We don't need to do that. Let's go down a little further. Look.
So that's San Francisco is San Francisco in Brazil, I think, right?
Is there a San Francisco in Brazil?
I think so. If you go back to that map, it'll show it, I think, in there. I think that's what they meant. So, yeah, on the top three down on the left, San Francisco is pointing to that little thing there, that city there probably. So when they said half of San Francisco, they meant
that one.
Half of that 12,900 hectares probably, and that's the pension fund, because I thought they were getting it from California.
Yeah.
Investment from California, but maybe it's that San Francisco.
So where are we here? Mark Carney, a poster boy for green finance. Mark Carney's best-selling book, Values and Speeches as UN Special Envoy on Climate Action and Finance, preach a simple idea. Climate change can be stopped if large banks, pension funds, and asset managers voluntarily change their investment habits to reduce carbon emissions. Finance is no longer a mirror that reflects a world that's not doing nearly enough. It's become a window through which ambitious climate action can deliver the sustainable future that people all over the world are demanding. Are you demanding that, Graham?
No, we're not demanding a sustainable future.
Carney said in a keynote speech at COP26 in November 2021, it'll help end the tragedy on the horizon. Mr. Carney's financial experience, network of political contacts, and UN special envoy status give credibility to the idea that financiers can be trusted to act on climate change. After more than a decade as head of the Bank of Canada and then Bank of England, Mr. Carney was appointed financial advisor to the UK government for COP26. He also launched an international task force on carbon credit markers to help companies use controversial carbon offsets to reach net zero emission goals. Carbon offsets.
I can't believe they're getting away with all this. After Al Gore's disastrous, implementation or suggestion of the carbon credits and all that bullshit and all the failed predictions, and then now they're allowed to weasel all this stuff in there and call whatever they want clean and whatever that they don't want dirty.
Mr. Carney's decision to accept a position at Brookfield while acting as UN Special Envoy on Climate Action and Finance, as well as Special Advisor to the UK government, raises important questions about his role in promoting weak voluntary schemes that do not effectively present the financing of deforestation or other environmentally damaging businesses and activities. And I'm not even saying that I agree with everything this article says. It's just more evidence of Carney lying and just like, you know, this crazy globalist shit going on in the background.
Yeah, there seems to be a hypocrisy there and a conflict of interest.
Mr. Carney was appointed vice chair and head of sustainable investing at Brookfield in August 2020, a year before any of the 9 farms highlighted in this report were sold off. His base salary at Brookfield is thought to be well above £879,000. He earned as governor of the Bank of England, and the asset manager openly says it gives senior leadership team significant stakes in the firm. He became chair of the firm in December 2022. When offered comment on these responses, Brookfield replied, stating the allegations refer to periods of time long before Mr. Carney joined Brookfield and to businesses in which Mr. Carney had no involvement. Moreover, Mr. Carney has demonstrated considerable leadership in Brookfield's transition investing strategy since its launch in 2021, including spearheading the fundraising and deployment of the world's largest climate impact fund. GFANZ is central to Mr. Carney's climate and finance vision. Launched in April 2021, GFANZ aims to broaden, deepen, and raise ambition to meet the Paris Agreement by creating a united financial sector-wide net zero alliance. It currently represents 450-plus member firms with more than $130 trillion in assets under management and advice. Unelected. GFANZ signatories originally signed up to mandatory criteria set by the Race to Zero, the UN standard setter for non-state net zero commitments, including a commitment to halve their emissions by 2030 and reach net zero by 2050. Deforestation became a key aspect of the Race to Zero criteria in June 2022, with new and existing members, including Brookfield, required to pledge to achieve and maintain operations and supply chains free of deforestation by 2025 at the latest. In September 22, GFANZ co-chairs, including Mark Carney, issued a press release warning that broader net zero targets were unattainable without immediate action to end the financing of deforestation, with the need to end all land conversion by 2030 at the absolute latest to limit global temperature rises to 1.5 degrees Celsius. The Science-Based Target Initiative, SBTI, which assesses and certifies private sector emission targets, also requires companies have a target date of eliminating deforestation by 2025 or earlier, or a target to be scientifically validated. In line with this, GFANZ guidance on transition plans recommends financial institutions should have deforestation policies and embed their net zero targets into all investment decision-making tools and processes. While this guidance recognizes that ending deforestation financing is an urgent priority, GFANZ itself does not have the power to compel its members to meet their voluntary targets, and the alliance appears to be reducing, not building, credible monitoring and accountability controls. The GFANZ is co-chaired by Mark Carney, who is in turn the chair of Brookfield, demonstrates the contradictions and conflicts of interest that arise when governments rely on the financial sector to design and implement pledge-based voluntary schemes with no fully transparent monitoring or accountability mechanisms. Brookfield denied the allegations, stating it unequivocally refutes allegations of a conflict of interest between Mr. Carney's outside interests and his connection to these historical allegations. In response to these allegations, GFANZ said in August 2022, it expected all of its members, including Brookfield, to meet the requirements of their sector-specific alliances and Race to Zero. So here's from forest to financial hubs, banks rake in the interest. So there's China, US, UK. Let's go down a little further. I thought I had some more highlighted down here. Here we go. Farm sale. Court documents show the farm was prohibited from being sold and was held as collateral by the Apicus Court in August 21 due to some unresolved issues described as tax enforcement, enforcement proceedings, and civil and labor proceedings. Despite this, Brookfield sold the farm's holding company, AgriProvale du Zirma, to an investor in January 2022, according to an update to the firm's articles of incorporation. Someone bought the business for £2.16 million, Rio Tocantos Precipitados. The buyer filed the documents to the Supreme Court in May 2022, explaining he was aware the farm was within land demarcated for the Kiabi indigenous groups and wished to register an interest in the ongoing dispute over the demarcated territory between the state of Mato Grosso and the federal government. Brookfield said it unequivocally refutes the specific allegations of human rights and abuses towards indigenous tribes, claiming that these were baseless allegations. When pressed for evidence to substantiate why it thought these claims were baseless, Brookfield did not reply. Brookford Brazil, formerly known as Brascan, has been linked to a whole host of other environmental and social harms. Newspaper reports from 1989 suggest the group has a long history of facing deforestation allegations. That year, a tin mine it jointly owned with British Petroleum was accused of deforesting at least 40% of the Jamari National Forest. A World Bank report calculated the mine had affected 900,000 hectares of the rainforest. Anyway, Brookfield, let's go down here. So here's the flood. A leak at the hydroelectric dam owned by the Asset Managers Brazil branch may have been behind the floods that devastated the eastern city of Rao Soares in January 2020. According to an investigation by the Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project, the floods impacted 800 homes and left 3,000 people homeless, according to February 2020 filings. So Brookfield denied responsibility for the disaster, saying the plant was too small to have an impact on the floods. Conclusion. Carney joined Brookfield in August 2020, at least a year before any of the farms discussed in this report were sold and nearly 2 years before its Amazon property was sold. As tropical deforestation rates rise and the financing of destructive agribusiness continues apace, existing financial regulation and voluntary initiatives such as the Race to Zero and GFANS have already shown themselves to be woefully insufficient. This epitomized by GFANS' decision to dump mandatory compliance with the Race to Zero just weeks before the body's planned introduction of an independent compliance mechanism. Brookfield's attempts to distance itself from these farms does not absolve the company of culpability. Anyway, I think that's all I got.
In some ways it's tough because, I mean, you and I both think that, you know, extracting resources for a better economy is a smart thing to do, especially in Canada. So
not growing soy though.
What?
Not growing soy.
No. Well, I mean, that's subjective, right? I mean, whatever crop you're doing, I mean, look at the monocrops that are happening in Saskatchewan, for example, right? I mean, there is a lot of that. But I think it's the hypocrisy and the acting green, like, because we can, you know, we have these other carbon credits over here. We can do this deforestation over there with conflicts of interest. And the people obviously aren't getting anything out of it, right? I mean, I think that the people, like, what I think the way we're talking about it, as far as like developing energy resources, would be that the people are supposed to get some of that wealth and prosper, not just these corporations and governments, right?
Yeah, especially corporations that are using, you know, paying fines for using slave labor. And it seems like they're just, he's, you know, the company's down there just railroading the place.
Yeah.
So that they can pretend to be green here.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Anyway, why don't you do one now?
Okay, this is important. This is an important one. Remember when I was had that idea? I wanted to make like a 3D model, almost in virtual reality, of the NGOs and the people responsible for them and all that stuff, right? Do you remember? I was like, I was even thinking of like maybe trying to run it by some people or trying to get. But anyways, it looks like that's kind of been done. So have you heard about the small R data Republican, the data Republican girl?
No. Negative.
So she's stirring up everything on the internet right now. I'm going to skip through to this. Discover how money flows through government grants, charities, and NGOs. So it looks like she's actually made what I was talking about here. There's a charity graph here that we can talk about. Visualize how the money flows. Explore financial connections among charitable organizations focusing on taxpayer funds received. This tool allows users to trace funding flows, offering insights into how taxpayer money is allocated within the charitable sector. So I'm going to pop over to this graph here. It's building the visualization. So it starts with like the high, some of the highest paid ones, right? The American Heart Association, Lancaster County Commission, Kaiser Foundation Health Plan, $82 billion in there. And you can click on it and you can see where it all goes. So you can search things by keyword in here and all that. But what's happened is she's been doxxed.
So I guess this is mostly US. Yeah.
Yeah. You can plug in EIN numbers. Actually, we should almost do that, but I'm going to go back here. And once I just tease that out a little bit, I want to go back and talk about why this is getting so much traction and why she's getting so much traction. So this is her account not too long ago. She says, I've been doxxed. Rather than let others control the narrative, I'm addressing this directly, because apparently she's had to spend like a massive amount of money on security. My name is Jenica Pounds. I recently resigned from my job to pursue Doge-adjacent efforts full-time. While my background check is still in progress, my ultimate goal is to work with the administration to cut waste and improve efficiency. What began as a side hobby became a mission when I uncovered the role of NGOs in these issues. This is not about left or right. This is about us, the people. I gave up everything for this, my safety, my career, because I believed in what I'm doing. I'm 100% deaf and nonverbal. My lack of signing fluency does not make me any less deaf. It is the result of a language impairment related to my autism called expressive dysphasia, which affects my ability to construct language fluently in real time. This impacts my signing, speaking, and even writing, though writing allows me more time to correct mistakes. My interpreter and I spend hours refining my talking points to ensure she conveys what I mean, not just what I say. I am deaf, and being deaf is not and never should never be, defined by one's signing ability, particularly when there is medical conditions involved. I do not believe the deaf community should be politically aligned with any party. A priority of mine has always been on holding the administration accountable to deaf Americans, including advocating for policy changes such as allowing a second interpreter camera stream on television broadcasts. I will continue using my platform to push for these necessary changes. So she wrote that because she was doxxed. Democrats doxxing a deaf autistic woman trying to help our country. Disgusting folks we're dealing with. Please support Data Republican. So she's got a whole bunch of really interesting stuff. So I want to play. I think I have a small clip of her. Do I have a small clip of her, or can I just do this one here?
You're still on Twitter, just so you know.
Yeah. So if these political NGOs were genuinely ideological, okay, actually here it is. I'm gonna play a little bit of.
Have uncovered that more people. What's one shocking or underreported piece of data that you have uncovered that more people need to know about?
There is around 7,000 NGOs that collect around 90% of taxpayer finances. We pay around
7,000 NGOs.
Around $300 billion.
Wait, is she doing fake sign language then or something? Or?
No. She just can't. She's not signing. Like, so if somebody was interpreting that, she has a hard time signing as well. It's like she would have a hard time speaking. So she needs somebody that's interpreting her in like a special interpreter, right? In a way, that's why there's a bunch of delays and stuff too.
Government money for nonprofits. And that is a huge percentage of our federal budget. And it's not directly for the military or health or security. And we just don't have any visibility into that. We have no transparency. We cannot see who takes that money, and it's important that we find out.
Absolutely agree with you. In your view, what's the biggest lie that the American public has been told, and what data do we have that proves it?
So most people believe that there's two separate political parties, right? The Democrats and the Republicans, but that is not true. Especially when you see that all of the politicians sit on the same boards, of these NGOs. So if the Republicans and the Democrats actually disagree, shouldn't they sit on the same boards? But no, they don't. They share the same board. They share the same money.
I think she meant sit on different boards.
And they often have names like freedom, peace, democracies, all of that.
So
I'll just cut it off there. But yeah, it's good. Just good to hear, see her talk and stuff. So she's saying the $300 billion number includes state and local taxpayer funds, 7,000 total nonprofits that are 90%, greater than 90% taxpayer funded. Only a fraction of those 7,000 nonprofits are political. We still don't have transparency or accountability in most cases. Then there's some examples here of like examples where both parties serve on the same NGO. I mean, that's pretty crazy, you know. And then here's an example of her looking at like Elon Musk, for example, in this, in her search thing here. This is her database. So she's trying to get in with Doge and work with Doge. She got doxxed when she was bringing out all this stuff. Had to get a bunch of security. A bunch of people kind of helped her out. She's got like hundreds of thousands of followers now, and she's trying to get into the into Doge to help things out.
Nice.
So let's say we have let's go back to this screen here with the charity. Let me just make sure I'm sort of done with that. I thought I had some more of her stuff. Let's see here. Check out this one for social engineering to Reuters. I think we've all heard about this one. Active social engineering defense, large e-scale social deception, $9 million to Thomson Reuters. COVID obligations, $162,000. I don't know what that means. So anyways, if we go back to this graph here, this chart, this charity graph. So, I mean, maybe... yeah, I don't think I want to play around with it too much while we're talking here. But like, let's say, what do you want to put in for a keyword? Let's try a search here.
Trump.
Well, I don't know if that's going to work. Trump. International Trumpet Guild.
Ooh, how much?
$819,000.
That seems like a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah. Sound the Trumpet Ministries, $347,000. Okay, let's try something else. Let's try climate. Or maybe Brookfield?
Try Brookfield.
Brookfield Volunteer Fire Company, Brookfield Volunteer Fire Department. That's it. So they're not, no charities named Brookfield. Climate will be a good one. So Climate Works Foundation, $336 million gross receipts. So they've got them color-coded here, too. Medium taxpayer funds, $1 million to $10 million, it looks like. Taxpayer funds, 5.8. So she's got gross receipts here, contributions, grants given, and taxpayer funds. So like Climate Policy Initiative, actually, I think we've all heard of that. $21 million only. Taxpayer funds, $5,100,000 and something.
Yeah.
C40's city, that's that C40's climate leadership group. So taxpayers, $8,500,000 in that. So that's pretty cool.
We need a Canada one.
Yeah, we do.
I would say, all right, my turn.
Sure. So anyways, I suggest people check it out. It's datarepublican.com and play around with it. Play around with the graphs, learn how to use it. Charity funding, nonprofit financials, people and relations is in beta right now. Officers and salaries, political campaign and grant funding, all that stuff. So check it out.
Check it out. All right, I got some Canada stuff here. It'll be fun. Go over to our nice, this is my little Epoch Time segment, Epic Epoch. Canadians leaving the country in growing numbers with nearly half of departures from Ontario.
Immigration rates have been soaring in Canada, driven by the ongoing housing shortage and the cost of living crisis. A new report suggests one province in particular accounted for nearly half of the departures. Among the 81,000 people who left the country in 2024, 39,430 were from Ontario. Ontario is the most densely populated province in the nation, but its 48% of departures is notably greater than its 39% share of Canada's total population. Last year marked the highest level of emigration Canada has seen in several years. Emigration from Canada overall reached that level in 2017 when 83,210 people departed. In Ontario, its 2024 figure, 39,430 people, leaving the province sets a new record. Ontario saw also a 66.5% spike in non-permanent resident departures. What's that? What's a non-permanent resident?
Well, that would be like a student,
a general immigrant. The province also recorded the highest departure of non-permanent residents in Canada. British Columbia, Alberta, and Quebec were the next largest sources of emigration, with 18% leaving BC and 13% leaving the other two provinces. Canada also experienced a major decline in the net flow of non-permanent residents. Net flow is the difference between inflow and outflow. The year 2024 saw a 50% reduction in the number of NPRs remaining in Canada, with the net flow falling to 319,000, down from the 2023 net total of 636,000. Every province experienced an increase in the outflow of non-permanent resident, with New Brunswick seeing the largest at 97%. Interprovincial migration slowed in 2024, with year-over-year movement dropping by 8% compared to 2023. Manitoba, Quebec, and Saskatchewan were the only provinces to experience an increase in incoming migrants at 14%. Alberta remained the most sought-after destination for individuals moving within Canada, despite a slight decrease in its in-migration figures compared to 2023. Alberta was also the only province to achieve positive net interprovincial migration exceeding 30,000 people. So I think we're also the only province that is demographically viable, even without immigration.
Right.
Barely. Not like by a lot, like just fucking hanging on by a thread. But I think we're there. Anyway, should we keep going here? I'll keep going with your buddy here. Your buddy, is it Mark Miller? Minister Miller? This douchebag? 1 million jobs at risk from U.S. tariffs. Can you believe it?
A million? What?
A million seems high, right? I mean, that's like, I think there's, how many workers are there in Canada? That's like 5% of the workforce.
Yeah.
The imposition of full U.S. tariffs on Canada places approximately 1 million Canadian jobs at risk, says Immigration Minister Mark Miller. No matter what we do, anytime you got a mark with a C, it's trouble. I'm telling you. No matter what we do, if tariffs come into place, it's going to be painful for the Canadian economy. A million jobs at risk is no joke, Miller said during a March 3rd press conference in Montreal. Miller's comments became before U.S. Presidential Donald Trump said later that day he would impose tariffs on Canada and Mexico, noting there's nothing either country could do to avoid them at this stage. Miller said he came out of those meeting with some ambivalence, not knowing whether they've been useful or useless. Canadian officials like Miller have sought to highlight that the Canadian border is much less problematic than the Mexican border. I mean, I can't understand why these guys just keep going with that. Nobody wants to hear that.
Well, what do you mean? Of course, people love hearing that.
I know, but it's like when you're, if you're like, you know, if you're, say a couple of your employees are stealing from you, and then you find out that, you know, one's stealing 10% and one's stealing 90%. And the other, you know, the 10% can say, hey, man, you know, it's still just, you know, it's not okay. And not to mention that it's just sort of based on what they find. It's not based on actual numbers.
Yeah.
We don't know what the actual numbers of drugs
like flow. The super labs that got busted. You mean like that? Those were sending stuff.
Like 198 million doses of fentanyl were on.
That was all for Canada.
That's all for Canada. The Canadian
economy. You think it's just going to go by ship somewhere else and not go across the land border? Come on.
The Canadian economy is largely dependent on free access to the United States. The majority of U.S. states also have Canada as their main export. We can't replace an economy that is responsible for 80% of our trade overnight. Bank of Governor Tiff Macklin said in late February, the consequences of a trade war will be severe and different from the COVID-19 economic crash.
So why don't we just buy more stuff from America? Like, why wouldn't the Canadian, why wouldn't the politician, I mean, forget the timing of
America, buddy. Get with the program.
What?
We're boycotting America.
I know, but it's because part of the reason is because we buy less from them. They buy more for us, right? Like when you look at the trade deficit, it's like 150 billion, right? 150,000 million, right? We don't buy from them. They buy from us. So I think that's what Trump's saying, right? Is let us buy more goods from Canada. So why can't we work on making that?
No, he wants to sell more stuff here.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I said. Yeah. That's exactly what I said.
But us, no, you said let us buy more stuff from Canada. You mean let us
more from us Canadians buy more stuff from the States. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I got it.
And then right before the election, I mean, can you believe this? Sean Rickard says, Supreme Court of Canada just announced their departure from X on the eve of a federal election. Why? I predict that Canadians are about to witness the most aggressive propaganda and fear-mongering campaign thus far as the Liberals go full totalitarian to cling to power. Buckle up and WTFU, Canada. So here's Supreme Court. Dear subscribers, moving forward, we'll be focusing our communication efforts on other platforms. We invite you to follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube accounts to continue receiving our updates. Thank you for your support. The Canadian Independence.
Really need a Twitter account or a Facebook account account.
Yeah, but don't go. I know, but then don't go on the other ones. Like, I just don't like that.
I agree. It should just not be on any of them. It's retarded. It does not need a Twitter page or a Facebook page or an Instagram page. It just needs a website I can go to find out the important facts. Because this just turns into a place for them to spew propaganda.
The Supreme Court of Canada is now undeniably influenced by left-leaning ideology. The role of court is meant to be impartial, and removing itself from a right-leaning perspective undermines the very essence of impartiality. This is proof that the Supreme Court of Canada is comprised of woke ideologies who have disdain for freedom of speech. Carl Harrison says, this disgraceful announcement, poorly worded and ill-conceived, reeks of political capture. One, the court doesn't have subscribers on X. Two, Canadians are not here to support you. You are employed by the Canadian people with the specific requirement that you are nonpartisan. Like, what world are we living in right now? Explain why you are leaving the most popular social media platform. Everything about you, your announcement is wrong. Well said. It's unfortunately quite childish. Call me old-fashioned, but I expect more from the highest court of Canada.
Yeah, I expect you to be busy doing court stuff and not on social media.
Dear subscribers. I'm going to go to the page here. Official Twitter account of the Supreme Court of Canada.
Why do we keep forgetting to talk about our new show? Picture the Supreme Court made me think of it. The problem in Canada on our A-list YouTube page. Episode 1's out and episode 2 is coming out on Sunday. And that's the A-list, the A-list.
Well, let me pull it up since we're...
EH, baby, EH. It's going to go into an endless loop of us streaming because we're streaming on it.
Oh, are we?
Yes.
Yeah, we are. Can I just show? Well, why don't I just show this?
Do it. Let's see what happens. Go there anyway. Just go there.
Oh, yeah. So there's a...
Not sharing it, motherfucker.
What? Oh, yeah. I'm not sharing it. Yeah.
There we go. There it is. There. Well, why does that show? That shouldn't show.
What shouldn't show?
Upcoming. It says upcoming. It's okay.
So there's upcoming up to... Where's F1? Yeah,
it's just down right there, that crown. Down right a little there. More, right there.
Yeah, right there.
I did the triple thumbnail test at the test and compare, and that's the one that was the best. So I just,
yeah, the myth of confederation.
Yeah, it's a good one. People should check that out.
And there's a new one coming out, and it's going to come out every Sunday for a bit. And we're doing these sort of historical ones for a bit, and then we're going to switch it back over to some other stuff. What are we wrapping up?
I thought we were, but
I was just bringing it up before we forgot, but we could wrap it up, I guess.
Okay.
I do have some more stuff, but hey, maybe we could do another one in a couple of days.
Yeah, yeah, let's do that. Or we'll do, we got more. So we got another one coming on Sunday anyways for Plus subscribers only, right?
Yeah, that's right. Maybe we could squeeze out another free one. We do have a little more time. So, I mean, we start giving you guys some more content in the hopes that you guys will find some more value in what we're doing here and support us wherever you can support us and like where you can like and subscribe where you can subscribe and share where you can share. But yeah, I think we could probably pull out another roundup for you because I do have some more content left here. I'd feel better about doing more short shows though than longer ones. You know what I mean? I feel like it keeps it punchy.
Yeah.
It's a long segment there, but I do have some good stuff. I have some gender ideology stuff and appointments that the liberals are making in last week. So there's a contact at the cabin page, contact@thecabin.com. We got some spots left for this tour with Randall Carlson exploring the Bonneville flood path out of Salt Lake City up into Idaho for a whole week with me and Brad and Randall and the crew. We got some great drivers and have a great time. It's going to be a good time there. We'll feed you. It's always five-star food, staying at Hamptons and Hiltons and things like that. So it's a fun time. It's a great trip. Check it out. And come on out. There's like 10 spots left or 8 spots left. So get on that there. Get on the Atlantis waiting list too. And you can come look for Atlantis in the Azores with it this fall. So that's going to be a good time. Of course, adultbrain.ca. We just added a bunch there this week. I added to the website, The Power of Positive Thinking by Norman Vincent Peale, Transcendental Magic by Eliphas Levi, The Crowned, A Study of the Popular Mind, and The Game of Life and How to Play It, which were good ones. So check those out, of course, on the website or any place else. You get audiobooks on the YouTube channel. The Crowd came out today on the YouTube channel. We get criminally low views on that YouTube channel. So that's another one you can go share with people and push them around, let them know what's going on. So all that good stuff. Check it all out. GrandAmerica.ca for other podcasts. And we'll see you guys a little later in that week, a little later this week. Other than that, we love you. Thanks for listening. And we will see you next week. Maybe sooner.
Maybe this week.
Maybe this week. Maybe Friday.
Who's going to kill this sacred cow? You were never political anyhow. Since when did you start trusting in the government? Since when was it okay to ridicule and shame your neighbor? Your opinions have become as fickle as artificial flavors. What matters most to you? What the TV host told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never religious anyhow. Since when did you kiss the ring on the hand of the Pope? Since when do we need pharmaceuticals to cope? Your soul has become, ever-loving soul has become, as brittle as communion wafers. What matters most to you? What the Holy Ghost told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. Bureaucrats think I'm non-essential anyhow. Since when has our culture become so lowbrow? It's all touchscreens, and nobody has any know-how. Your idea of fun is taking 1,001 photos of your duck face. Matters most to you what the celebrity's post told you was cool, or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your sacred cow. I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill your sacred cow. I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill your sacred cow. I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill your sacred cow. I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill your sacred cow. I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill your sacred cow. I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill your sacred cow.